Blog Talk Radio.
Come shine your light, open your heart, show us your gift that sets you apart. When you believe, then you can see that you are the star of your own destiny.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. My name is Lynn, and I'm your host of the show. Today is April 20th, and I just wanted to go ahead and put out there for everyone that listens, I have been getting very strongly that the Honoring Hour is going to be shifting somewhat. And I don't know that that's going to mean that the shows and the type of shows are going to be shifting so much as how I am running them and things that are going on for me. So I do want you guys to know that I am taking a small vacation in the middle of May, but I'll be back in June. I'm going to have a May 4th show that I hope you guys will join me for. It's Karen Wrigley and I are going to be collaborating to bring you animal communication and channeled messages relevant to stuff going on the planet and just how to live, love, and laugh in challenging times. So I hope that you'll join us on that show. And then I'm going to be taking a break until June and starting up, and I'm excited to see what changes are in store, because at this moment, I'm not sure what they are. I just know that there's going to be some changes. So I hope that you'll join us there. In the meantime, you're welcome to enjoy some of our archives, and we've had some really great guests on here, so I know that you'll enjoy those. Speaking of great guests, I am so delighted to have back on the show today Stephen Victor. Stephen is a consultant, teacher, and writer in the fields of compassion and human possibility, and he shares his message worldwide. So I'd like to welcome to the show today Stephen. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. Hi, good morning.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And Stephen, you and I were just talking about the last time you were in the show, we had a very lively chat room, and I was grateful to have my friend on here co-hosting with me. So I would like to ask you again, for people who may not have listened to the other show or weren't able to join us that day, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came into this work?
I suppose the short version is that there was something beyond me wanting my attention, and call it life itself or the mystery, and it went to great lengths to get my attention, and I finally came around and said yes, I'll do what I'm here to do.
Awesome. That's wonderful. And what exactly do you do? I know I was on your website, and you really are literally all over the world. I mean, you are traveling a lot. So what is it that you're, you have different venues that you present, but can you tell people, like, what you're doing and some of the upcoming stuff that might be going on for you?
Well, in the Netherlands, for example, coming up, I'll be doing a constellation workshop. It's my version of Bert Hellinger's Family Constellations, where I work with, and the group I work with, works with the what I call fields of grace, or fields of grace and wisdom, that are simply waiting human detection so that they can collaborate and we can collaborate with them to create more ease. It's a form of divination on how best to proceed from here and getting perspective on how to proceed from a non-human means, say universal intelligence. In Cyprus coming up, I will be doing a workshop that I've called the Design Studio. And what it's really about is leading and navigating one's own life to move into a really genuine expression of oneself. And it is really pragmatic in that there are communication skills and conflict resolution skills, envisioning and execution skills, and a kind of a basic framework of really embodying one's own divine sovereignty. Then in in the Tweed Coast, or on the Tweed Coast in Australia, I will be working with various methods, some constellation methods, some trauma relief, and around with groups of people who are awakening, but also have endured all the floods and the rain and the difficulties in the Brisbane area earlier this year, that they've been impacted by these traumas, and it's time to get those behind them, so they're more comfortable in their being, so they can move on with their lives.
That's some fantastic work. I'm glad that people are here on that planet doing that work, because we could all use it. And you know, we had when I corresponded with Bridget, who is just an absolutely lovely individual. I'm so glad to have nice people to correspond with. She chose your topic, or she gave me the topic that we're going to be talking about today, which is honoring self and living genuinely. And, you know, it sounds to me like that whole idea of conflict resolution and how we're handling stuff today is pretty much, you know, just being our authentic selves is pretty much what you're going to be doing in one of the workshops that you're doing, or one of the seminars. So can you tell us, because it says, you know, we're not in this life nor on this planet to live a small life or to hide from our grandeur, nor refuse experiencing the sweet poetics of this life. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, and especially today, you know, when things are just so chaotic? And I was thinking the other day, I was saying to someone, we're almost halfway through April, and before I could get April out, they said 2011, and I'm like, wow, you know, things are just going by so fast. Can you talk to us about that and share, you know, what are some things we can do to just kind of be who we are in those moments?
Well, I think I'll speak from, I think, mostly what I'm learning through my own experience, and mostly because of doing it inappropriately or doing it in a way that creates problems and then stopping. And, you know, for years we've been read about or been taught about be here now, and you know, Ram Dass gave us that years and years ago, and yet I'm not sure that many of us, even those of us who fancy ourselves as on the path to awakening, have really embraced really being here now, and what does that mean? And for me, it means really slowing down, whether it's slowing down my energetic motion, whether it's slowing down my physical movement, and even now I'm talking very quickly, whether it's slowing down my rate of speech. There's a way in which I think I've maintained a disconnection from the genuine being I am simply by moving fast in my life. And all of, seemingly all of life's institutions urge us to move quickly. And I'm not convinced that our authenticity or our genuine expression is going to be born out of moving fast. So the first bit of awareness is, am I living moment to moment the way I want? Do I feel the way I want to feel? Am I in a state of mind or an emotional state or an energetic state that feels right to me? Am I at equanimity with my circumstance and my environment? And for me, when I answer these questions, as long as I've been in this process for 30 years of awakening and teaching, I'm not there. And am I closer? Yes. And so it's the movement is into coming to an enwentment with an at-one-ment with self that I thought I was living, and others may think they're living as well, that may not be the case.
So do you find that you'll wake up some days and realize that you're not, I mean, like every day is a new thing, like, oh, you know, look back in reflection and say, well, yesterday I wasn't truly being myself. Are you still at that stage where you, you know, it's a day-to-day thing?
No, that I don't know whether I can relate to your question. That I think there's another level I'm speaking to, and that is, for example, 3 years ago I started writing poetry, and it surprised myself. I surprised myself, and yet that I think is perhaps the most authentic expression that I've ever had in my life is when I write poetry. Mm. And it was totally outside of my awareness that it was even a possibility for me. And so if that's the case, what other expression is here or way of being that is waiting? And I think the only times I know that is when I'm slow down and am present with myself, where I'm moving differently than my typical day, which is my typical day is there is awareness present of myself and what I'm doing and my choices, and I'm aware of the energetics of myself and the energy around me and other people, and yet there's another level I'm referring.
So it's deeper than that. There's a part of you, if I'm hearing you correctly, there's a part of you that stays in a more connected space where almost like an observation of the part of you that interacts in daily life. Is that may not be an accurate interpretation of what I heard.
I'll ask that again.
When you were talking about that, I was actually kind of like feeling myself going through a scenario of the past 4 months, because there have been so many babies in my house in the past 4 months. I've had a grandson, new grandson born, and some puppies born. And so as you were talking about that, the way I was seeing it for myself was that there's an awareness that stays connected with universal intelligence. And then there's a part of us that, not that they're separate, but that they can be, in some people, not necessarily yourself, be disengaged, where that awareness stays very connected to universal intelligence, and then there's part of us that interacts in our day-to-day life, and we are not as clearly aligned with ourselves that's connected universally. And what I was hearing with you is that you're staying pretty aligned together, even with that universal intelligence and your daily interaction. And you were bringing in new stuff like the poetry, which is something that you had not envisioned yourself doing before.
That's correct. And let me bring it another articulation to it. Sometimes in my programs, there are women and mothers who have adult children, and their complaint is that they're attending more to their adult children than they are to their own lives. And that's I think that's a delightful realization, that for so long that their entire awareness or identity has been wrapped up in being mother. And now that their children have been gone 10, 12 years, that there's something awakening in them that wants a life that's distinct from being a mother. Now, in my case, it's common with men and women, but I'll speak to men because I know that differently than I know it with women. In that, intellectually, I've understood that I'm not my work for eons, and yet that very much unconsciously I've identified who I am with my work, and that there's a way in which that that awareness and that the split of becoming conscious of at more levels that, oh, I really am a distinct being from the work that I do, and that what is it going to take for me to live the life that is mine, that is distinct from my work? Because whoever or whatever human being is, it has nothing to do with their past nor their behavior. And so what is this being? How does this being want to be in ways that are distinct and separate from his work? Is that clarifying at all?
Yes. Yes. So how do you help people distinguish that when they are not present to that themselves?
Well, in the case of the women with the adult children, I used a process and had them release their bond and connection with the mother archetype, so that they could simply be free of that, so they could have some spaciousness to find out some aspects of themselves and what expression, whatever it is that they are, wants. And that people have told me who've gone through that process that for 30 days it's a pretty disorienting and uncomfortable experience, and then they begin finding their bearings with more distant from that identity of mother. So there's some methods of doing that, and they're working with the energies. And as you know, the archetype is simply a model, an energetic model in somewhere in the fields of the mystery that align with people. When a woman gets pregnant, she aligns with that, or a father archetype, when a man creates a child, he aligns with that. And we all align with different models of how to engage life, and we can change that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, for myself, I've got a son who's an adult and has a child of his own now, but I also have a daughter who's still a child. So I found myself about 4 months ago when my grandson was born, and it really, I never thought about this until I was just listening to you just now. I have experienced some, I guess this is what's making me feel so wobbly, is that I'm a mother to my daughter. My son, you know, he needs to go and do his own thing, and I'm completely comfortable with that, so I let him go when he's in my home, and he does stay in my home, so he has rules to follow, but in terms of parenting him, I've let go of that. But then I'm readjusting in a whole new relationship to my grandson and having all this go on. So when you're running across women like myself who have these dual places where we're letting go, you know, of one child because my children are further apart and still mothering another, and then having the, you know, becoming a grandmother on top of that. And I by no means, you know, like I never felt old because I had a grandmother. I think it's a delightful thing. But it is definitely a different experience and, you know, a different relationship. It's fun being a grandparent, I have to say, because it's all, you know, you can do all the good stuff and, you know, you get to pick and choose. Like I get to pick and choose if I want to change his diaper or not. I can hand him back to his parents. So it's fun stuff like that, but, you know, I get all the blessing that goes with it. And I have found myself over the past 4 months, without having thought about it until just now, really redefining my relationships and who I am. And that was just like a moment of clarity for me, and I never really thought about it in those terms because I have kind of gotten caught up with so much newness and the excitement that comes with a new baby that I really didn't realize I had engaged in that so much. So for people who have dual roles, do you have, or multi roles really, do you have some words of wisdom and in how to relate to their archetypes and when to let go and how you might hold on to an archetype and with someone like with my daughter but not necessarily with my son?
Well, maybe. and I think it comes around our social pressures or environmental pressures to conform to certain routines or certain ways of being or and doing, that those ways of being or doing are related to our beliefs. And no matter whether we have beliefs that we like and seem to support our lives, or we have beliefs that we have that we don't like and that inhibit what we want to do, the reality is if we have beliefs in place about how a mother of a young person is supposed to be compared to how a younger mother of an older person is supposed to be, how a grandmother is supposed to be, we're primarily relating to the belief and not the reality, not the individual life that's present with us. And so the only thing that's worth imparting is if there's a way that we can look at our beliefs or at our ways of relating to people as simply maps, and that there we can get a map of a certain territory that is a highway map, or we can get a map that shows rainfall or topography or vegetation or weather. And so there are lots and lots of different ways to consider a territory, and that if I stay flexible and respond to the person in front of me and relate with the life that is constantly occurring rather than the belief or a specific map, there's more freedom in myself and more vitality in my life and in the relations with the other. Did that make any sense?
It did. It did to me. And I don't know if other people would interpret this, but it's for me, what I was hearing is that, you know, I have to live in that moment. If I feel like, you know, engaging in something, or if that's how I want to behave, then behave that way, you know, or do whatever. But I don't have to necessarily, because, you know, because my grandson just walked in the door, I don't have to stop everything I'm doing and sit down and rock him and be grandma. I can, which I don't do, by the way. But just as an example, yeah, just kind of be with what feels right in the moment as opposed to what might be expected.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Letting the life herself or the mystery of herself communicate with you what it and respond to it. She is asking you, I often talk about becoming wisdom's consort, and wisdom is this divine energetic presence, and she's asking us and asking us and asking us for a response, and it's different moment to moment to moment, and that if we're attentive to either her or the moment and are fully present and relaxed, which most of my life I have not been and am working toward, then we can respond to what the mystery wants through this child or through this moment.
Right. Yeah, and I have to say, you know, I am not one to conform really to societal norms. It's actually uncomfortable for me. But what I find too is that a lot of times, instead of conforming, I conform in a different way. I conform through rebellion, as opposed to being. And that's been my learning. I have a tendency to learn through duality, and you know, I just haven't made my lessons very gentle and loving. But I will tend to rebel as opposed to conform. That in and of itself is also not a healthy way to go about honoring yourself. But just living that authenticity and just being who you are. And what I try to do is, if I'm making myself happy, if I'm happy in the moment, then it's got to be right for everyone. If I'm feeling joy and contentment and peace and love and, you know, all those good free-flowing emotions and feelings, then it's the right thing. But I haven't always done that. Sometimes I've not conformed to societal norm because I have been angry, or I've been pressured into, or, you know, I feel the pressure of trying to behave a certain way, and so I'll actually do the opposite, which is dishonoring too. And I'm learning to bring that into balance and be that way. And I am realizing that since my grandson has been born, I was redefining myself and got caught up in some societal norms that really I need to rebalance.
Well, it's nice, your awareness is nice that if you're conforming or if you're rebelling, you're distant from your sovereignty, and if you're really in your being, in your moment, being genuine, connecting with your divine sovereignty, whatever that is, you may have the appearance of conforming or you may have the appearance of rebelling, but it's neither. And this, I think, is what you're speaking to, or maybe what you're speaking to, that's evinced by your lightness of being or your joy. Because I think there's a lot of intelligence in that, because it's the joy is simply you're attending to the light rather than the heaviness or whatever else is there.
Right. Right. And I, you know, when I've worked with people or when I've talked with people, what I do hear a lot is I have a good friend who we've done a lot of things together, and, you know, she'll say, well, my family thinks I'm being selfish. But then when she's miserable. And do you speak to people on that, about how they get past that feeling of selfishness and, you know, the guilt of being, you know, just being true to themselves?
Well, sure. In the context that it presents itself, and so how to give a generic response that's meaningful, it might take a few moments. And yet maybe there's something else you want, that question is a lead into, that I can speak to.
Well, like when I'm thinking about the conversation that I have with my friend, she's a doer. She loves to do for other people. And then she'll often say, you know, I know, well, actually, she's recently become ill. And we talked about this a couple years ago, that you know, if she continued to always serve others and literally serve them and not take care of herself and take some downtime for herself, because she'd be like, well, I want to go do this, and she'd give herself like a little bit of time to do it, but not enough time to enjoy it, because she had to get back because somebody was expecting something for herself. And she would, you know, she wanted to go and take care of herself and do things that she enjoyed, but she felt guilty for taking the time away from others. And, or, you know, somebody might say, you know, you're being selfish because you won't help me. And it was a really unhealthy dynamic. And so, you know, with people that are kind of stuck there, and she enjoys, like, part of what makes her happy is when she's helping others, but it had gotten into a really unhealthy system. And so now, a couple years later, she's actually ill, and she's having to stop and go back and say no and do things for herself. And whereas I think if she could have recognized that guilt as being an expensively unhealthy trip, do you talk with people about when they start feeling guilt? Because I hear that in my work a lot, that they feel guilty doing stuff for themselves.
Well, there are lots of levels to respond, and I think I want to start at quite an abstract level.
Okay.
Having worked in countries in the world that are non-Christian, and to spend time in places that that are either based in other religions than Christianity, which are quite distinct, or there's religious culture present, but it's quite removed. It's more of a secular thing. It makes me look at this country, the States, in that culturally this is a Christian country, and there are, so that everyone here unless they belong to other religions, that and whether they belong to other religions or not, they're affected by the the Christian mores, the Christian culture. It's in the concrete, if you will. It's in the atmosphere, and that any cultural fabric has streams of energy that propel us into it or draw us into those filaments, those movements, and guilt is one of them. And it is part of, there's purely psychological guilt, and yet then there's, that psychological guilt is part of a larger field. And the Christian culture has guilt in it. Now, guilt is used in marketing, and it's used to manipulate wherever it is. And we all fall prey to that. And so this is a beautiful example, you speaking about your friend, because she has a sense of wanting to do something for herself. There's some movement in her sovereign that wants an expression. And yet there's so much pressure in every form possible to conform to being and doing something else. And so how do I speak to that? Well, the question is, am I feeling the way I want to feel? Or if I'm getting sick, what's going on here? What's attempting to get my attention? And to me, we all have to create some kind of narrative or story or explanation about whatever's going on in our lives. I mean, we don't have to, but we do. And so the question is, I have this going on in my life. What's attempting to get my attention? And what is expected and wanted of me? And so when I feel guilty, I can say, well, what larger movement is wanting my attention? What do you want me to do differently? So, am I being clear here?
Yes. Yeah, so you're saying to look beyond the immediate circumstance and into a broader understanding of why something may be occurring.
And then ask yourself the question, what is life asking me? What is the mystery asking me? Believing that the mystery wants, may, depending again on your frame of reference, may want an honorable existence, an honorable life, me to live an honorable life. So what's getting my attention? Am I living honorably if I'm feeling guilty? What could I do instead? Or what does this guilt have to teach me? Start asking questions. And for me, it'll come around, what's wanting to get my attention? Thank you. You have my attention. What do you want from me now? How do you want me to be? What do you want me to do? What's right for me? Not what's right for the world. What's right for me?
And how do you, for people who are not familiar with listening to that answer, do you guide them through that? Do you walk them through that? Is that part of your process also in helping them learn to listen to that greater message, to get past that mind chatter?
Well, to respond to that so that your listeners have a tool, go connect with something that you like in nature. Connect with a flower, a tree, a brook of running water, a river, a mountain, and go sit or be present and smell the fragrance of flowers. Go sit under a honeysuckle arbor. Feel the wind touching your face. Watch the leaves in the color of the leaves this time of year, and watch them move in the breeze, and start making a practice of regularly, multiple times a week, doing that. And through nature, you can learn to listen and ask. If you have an affinity for some particular aspect of nature, start talking with it and let it communicate with you. It is a brilliant pathway to begin listening to yourself, but you'll begin through nature. That perhaps is the most pragmatic tool and that we have immediately, even if you're in a city. I mean, there's always flowers that are going to break up through a crack in the sidewalk somewhere, or blades of grass, or something. That is the way to start. And if you want one more practical piece, it's learning from martial artists. Martial artists center themselves in their belly. They can't execute a movement unless they're really, really centered. And it takes them years to do that. And yet there is a way to put your hand on your belly and feel your feet on the ground and use your intent and the movement of your body while it breathes to begin collecting your center and bring it into your body. And it might take 20 minutes, but you'll feel a presence in your belly. And then from that presence, imagine an anchor chain, and anchor yourself to the center of the earth and feel your feet in the earth. Because when we're grounded and we have our center collected, we're no longer frenetic, and we can begin to really execute some changes. And doing that, getting centered and feeling your feet in the earth while you're out in nature, it's a rather short movement to begin listening so that we can find out what's wanting to get my attention. And then you tell it, yes, you have my attention. Thank you for getting my attention through my guilt or through how I'm feeling ill. And do whatever one needs to do medically to take care of yourself, but also engage in this other conversation. That's the movement into authenticity. That's the movement into being genuine. That's the movement into your sovereignty.
And that movement actually transcends cultural norms and the things that we've learned. Because we do, I know, you know, growing up here in America, and I live in Virginia, we're very close to the nation's capital, and I find the energy here to be different than even when I go a little bit further south. I mean, we just have that political air that's here. And there's, you know, I find that I have to step outside of what my learning is. And I see my family sometimes be fearful, like my family of origin be fearful, because I don't live, I guess, the expected cultural, what's mm-hmm. expected of me culturally.
I understand.
But it's uncomfortable for me to, you know, to be in that. I can do it for small periods of time, but then things just start to really feel extremely uncomfortable for me. So that's a big step, I find, with people. And, I mean, even for myself, because sometimes I will jump back in and, you know, like I said, it doesn't last for me very long. It turns again into a lot of rebellion. But I find that seems to be challenging for people also, is to, well, we were taught this, we were taught that. But moving into that sovereignty that you're talking about, that actually transcends that, and it helps you move past those expectations. Would you agree with that?
Wholeheartedly. And the reality is that if a person is going to grow, they're going to go through periods of feeling guilty. And that another way to move beyond that is to acknowledge, this is who I am and this is what I'm doing. And then as they do that and then begin to actually live in the way they want to, they'll move through that guilt. And as Bert Hellinger, a brilliant teacher, used to say, then that guilt will become a strength and you'll no longer feel guilty, but you'll be strengthened by that. However, if we're going to grow through the cultural norms or familial norms, it's going to involve feeling guilty. But then when we stake our claim, this is who I am and this is how I'm living, then we cease to feel guilty and we're stronger. And that's, so well done. That's my only, our only path forward is to respond to the call of the mystery. And that starts by living your own life rather than the life that society wants you to live. Mm-hmm. And then once we begin living our own life, then there's a lot of expression that is asked of us. And then we have to awaken to that and start responding. And yet, I use the word the verb. It doesn't matter how we live. We can live any way we want. There is no right way. And yet those who are drawn to awaken or live differently, we're speaking to that.
Right. And you, obviously, you're talking to people all over the planet. So this isn't just an American or, you know, an issue going on in the United States. I mean, people in other countries, they're going through a similar process. It may just be showing up differently.
Yeah. I like the phrase from the British science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke. He said that the future is not what it used to be. Well, I'm saying that the now isn't either, and it is worldwide. This is a phenomenon affecting everything on the planet, and every person on the planet. And the question I have is, what is your individual story that explains or gives a context for this dynamic that's happening in this epoch? I mean, had we been born 600 years ago, we'd be faced with different realities. Well, we're not. We're here now. So what is your story? And I invite you that whatever story you create, you do so in a way that supports your genuine grandeur, your true expression, and that whatever you identify as the whole is frame it in a life-affirming way, rather than one of I don't know, the opposite. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm. You did to me, yes.
Yeah.
So it just occurred to me, and I have this in the chat room, but I want to mention it for people who are going to be listening to the archives or who are listening but are not in the chat room. You can find out more about Stephen and find out what he's doing and follow up with him by going to www.stephenvictor.com, and he spells Stephen with a P-H. So it's StephenVictor.com. And I apologize for not mentioning that earlier. I like to try to mention it several times. It has been in the chat room. So the people that have been in there have been able to get it. But that's a great way to go on there and see, you know, some of the stuff that he's doing. So, but yeah, on with cultural norms, do you find that, I would imagine that in traveling around the world, that do you find that there are little, different countries have, like in America, I can see guilt being a huge thing here. Are there other countries that, like, guilt isn't so much their trip, but, you know, maybe another another way of processing is, do we all pretty universally have the same stuff we're going through?
Yeah, one country comes to mind right now that guilt that is used there is done differently. And yet, when you say all over the world, in truth, I work in countries that are westernized or have a lot of Western influence, and whether they're in the Middle East or the Levant, or so, you know, that's it's a comment that interests me about I work all over the world, and I hear that often, and yet that's a myopia. I think that most Westerners believe that we are the world. I have done some work in South America, and that's a Latin civilization. It's not, even though it's been Westernized, and so it's helpful, I think, for us to start realizing that the Western model of civilization is only one model, and it's got its strengths and weaknesses, and there are other models of civilization that too have had their strengths and weaknesses. I mean, historically, the East has produced some of the most brilliant culture and poetry, and was the origin of mathematics. And so it's moving to a place of, I think part of our sovereignty and divine sovereignty is moving to a place that the world is full of sovereigns, and every way is a right way. It may not be right for me, but it's right for another, and that our, well, in neurolinguistic programming, there's skills, methods for teaching skills for how to create rapport, which means trust and understanding, which means responsiveness. But at a deeper level, it's about acknowledging another being deep within their self and within themselves, so they can acknowledge and experience and move on. Well, in this process of learning rapport and how to create rapport, one finds very easily that the structure of the world or the universe is like likes like. And so it's natural to have an affinity for those who are likeness, but what is unnatural is to have disdain for those who are different. And so our movement, as we move into a divine sovereignty, we'll see that we need to release any fear and any disparaging of anyone or anything that is different, that and recognize that like likes like, and at the same time, at least in the biological world and in our physical reality, that diversity is imperative. That unless we have diversity of nature, we have no life. And so our movement into our sovereignty, it's happening all over the world. We're all facing a lot of similar problems, at least in what I can see in the Western world. What I read in other parts of the world are different, or some in the Middle East I see. But the reality is the movement is toward our sovereignty. And when we truly stand in a divine sovereignty, we're standing in love. And there is no problem with difference. So that's our movement. That's what's happening. And I think it is happening globally, even though I can't speak to it personally.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm glad you brought that up about, you know, because I know that I have limitations based on my experience, but I really would love to learn more about other cultures and other ways of living and other belief systems, and I put this out there periodically. I think it's a great time to put it out there now. I want diversity on this show. That has been a goal of mine, you know, since its inception, and I always hope and pray that someone will contact me with something that is beyond my understanding and my knowing that I can have on here, because I want to grow and learn too. And I do. I find a friend of mine she frequents Singapore. She's doing some work over in Singapore, and I asked, you know, after she was there after the stuff that was going on in Japan, and she had a layover in Hong Kong, and I just asked, you know, how is this impacting, you know, the people over there on that side of the planet? And she was talking about their difference in the way that they're handling it and the lack of fear in the people that she's, you know, been exposed to, whereas, you know, at the time when I was talking to her, there was a lot of fear about the nuclear stuff here in the United States, or, you know, there was a hubbub about it. I don't read it, so I don't know exactly. I'm speaking just from seeing titles on the Internet, headlines on the Internet. But she said that it was just a completely different way of dealing with it and handling it, and, you know, their needs were different, and their gratitude is there, but their needs for our intervention, you know, was not necessary so much. So I do put that out there because I do want to learn. That's part of, like, who I am and just my natural curiosity. I love to learn about different stuff. But I agree. I tend to speak from my frame of reference, which is, you know, the Western philosophies. No matter how much I read, I don't have a hands-on experience of other stuff so much. So thank you for bringing that out, because I do believe that is, you know, when we're really comfortable with who we are and what we are, and we do listen to that inner guidance and that universal wisdom, and we're connected with that, we're not threatened by difference.
Yeah, I think the dominant center of the United States is fear, and I think it's being brokered to further foreign and domestic policy. I think it's being brokered to further commercialism that supports U.S. industry. And it's done at a huge cost. It's done at a cost with U.S. and international relations. It's done at a way that is creating enormous difficulty not only for ourselves but many, many peoples on the planet. And we're at a time when, at least in my personal cosmology or my story of what is, that we're moving in a direction, and we're at a time where we can begin as people shifting that, where we can move away from living in fear and step more fully into our sovereign. And I think, as you see in the Arab world with all the activities that have gone on and still are going on, with people saying enough, I'm no longer going to live this way, they have released the grip that fear has had on them. And so it's a worldwide phenomenon that we're in the process of freeing ourselves from the fear brokering of nation states and commerce. And we're going to have to brail our way forward. However, it's quite easy to see, at least for many of us on the planet, that the model of fear brokering has run its course. It's over, even though we're still within its grip, and maybe for some time, it's done. And so we're moving our way forward, and it is about moving toward our own autonomy and truly begin living our own lives and having the expression that is ours. And well, some of us are going to do that more easily and well, and some of us are going to be fraught with struggle and difficulty and failure. And yet, they are right. These failures that we're having in these movements, this movement forward, is right. Because if we're not failing, we're not doing something different. And when something isn't working, it's imperative to do anything differently. So that's the place where we're at, and lots of diversity on the planet, and we're all in this process together.
Yeah, and that's great. That's great. And I do love, you know, I do love the idea of when something's not working, do anything different. You know, so that is definitely that's a mode of mine, but I have family members that don't. They'll do the same thing over, and it's quite frustrating to watch. So, and then they get frustrated with me because I'll try something different, but it doesn't work. But I'm like, well, it wasn't working before anyway, so it really doesn't matter that this didn't work. Try something new. So, but I find too that that I, you know, I mean, I can certainly have challenge with change, but I actually like change. Like, I'm more comfortable with change. And what I do find is, like, my family members that are not like that, they want everything really routine. They don't want change at all. So with the people that you work with mostly, I would imagine that you would have to be attracting to you people that are ready for change, at least to some degree.
Yeah. When the people, you know, you mentioned your family is not so keen on change. Love them as they are, and live your own life. And it seems to be a reality that whether we like it or not, we are all of us are keen on hanging on to what is for whatever reason, rather than letting go and letting ourselves change. And even though I say I love change and I like it, obviously, where I haven't moved to doing things the way I want to do them in certain areas of my life, I'm somehow resisting the change, that the very change that I want. And so I do attract people who are keen on change, and at the same time, like all of us, there are within each of those there are pockets where they're holding on and not letting go. And you know, Virginia Satir, the famous family therapist said, you know, the past is more compelling than the future. And what I think is going on is there's when we have a compulsion to hang on, that's very different. There's another way to move, which is only recently coming into my awareness, and that is to let go and let life move me rather than me doing the movement, doing the change. Let life change me. And, you know, the metaphor would be letting the current carry you in a boat. And that, you know, when we live from a place of most of us grew up saying no to life, that is pretty fearful to let the current move and move with the current. However, if there are teachers now saying the thing we need now is to learn how to say yes to life. And in saying yes to life, one can move beyond that where you're simply carried. And that's where I'm excited about going.
And that speaks to me about trust. So do you have any, we've got just a couple minutes left, but do you have any, because for me, I know when I am resisting change, what I'm finding is I'm not trusting. I'm not trusting what's coming next. I'm not trusting that universal flow. And I'm obviously not saying yes to life in that moment. So do you have any words to share about trust?
Well, there's a great teacher who for me, has debunked that whole idea of trust. And he has said that it's not trust that we're after, we're after relaxation. And so if we relax into a moment, then we can be moved. And it's what I spoke to earlier about me moving into the now. I want to write much more than I've been writing. And what's been in my way or what is in my way of my writing is me failing to relax fully into the now. I know that at times when I've written poetry, I am relaxed in the now, and yet it's hard for me, or I'm reluctant to let go of whatever keeps me from that. But I know in my own case, in my own experience, to think that there's something valid about relaxing into the now, and then no trust is required. Just like in my workshops, oftentimes. There's a stage where I talk to people about the imperative of faith, but once faith is only a transitional requirement. Once we move into this another realm of awareness, faith is irrelevant because it is simply a being, and that being place that I have also visited is simply one of being relaxed. So I don't know how coherent what I said is, but am I pointing to something here?
Oh, it was very coherent to me, and I have to say thank you so very much for that, because it just, when you said that, I couldn't keep the grin off my face. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I needed to hear, because I like tangible things, and relaxation is a tangible thing. I can feel my body relax, I can feel my mind relax, and I can do that without having to trust. You know, that is a great gauge, and it takes the burden off of trust. So,
yeah. Trust is a psychological phenomenon, and relaxation is an energetic circumstance.
Right. Well, yeah, thank you. I'm so glad I asked that question, because it made a world of difference to me.
Oh, good.
So.
Good.
I hope it did to someone else. So, well, we are down to our last minute. So, Stephen, I want to thank you so very much for, you know, being willing to be back on the show. I'm so glad I got to be here and present with you. The chat room was completely quiet, which I have to say I put out to the universe. I just wanted a nice, quiet chat room this go-round. I do thank you so very much for being on the show and for showing up in the world and doing your work.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure talking and being with you. Appreciate
Perfect.
It a lot.
Great. Well, thank you all for joining us today and for listening to us in the future from the archives. If you have an opportunity to join myself and Karen Wrigley on May 4th, I'd love to have you do that. And we are planning on doing that once a month. Don't forget, if you're listening to this, take May. But I'll be back full force in June, hopefully with some new things that are beyond my current horizons. So until then, have a wonderful couple of weeks, and I'll visit with you all again soon.